Welcome back, friends, nerds, librarians, to episode 80 of the SS Librarianship Podcast. We are creeping closer to that big 100.
So, yeah.
It's getting there.
Yeah.
And this is such a great one. Our first mate came aboard again.
Yeah, from a distance.
Yeah, from a hotel room in North Carolina. Mary Jingleski joins us today.
With questionable power outlets, apparently.
Apparently. Or, like, no, it sounded like the actual power to the hotel had gone out.
Ugh.
And it was actually to let to part the kimono for everyone. This was the third time we tried to record this episode.
Yeah.
And, like, there was bad weather and a power outage, and Mary had no internet, and then I got sick. And then this time... The power went out again, but we got it done for you all.
Yes, it is a good one. So we get to hear what Mary's been up to recently in Mind Grapes. We also get to talk to her about the job that she's had for a couple of years now, a year and a bit.
Yeah, so she's working for Equinox, which does it's like a vendor, sort of, but they do like support for open source ILSs based on the Evergreen and Koha systems. So
yeah,
lots of traveling around and teaching people about cool technology things, which is so up Mary's alley, so she unpacks that for us.
So it's a really great episode. I hope you guys enjoy it. So without further ado, let's get this one started. I'm Allie Sullivan, and I passed a slutty tree on the way here. Who wants to have sex with a tree?
Was it a maple? And I'm Sam Mills, and these violent delights have violent ends.
So, Sam...
Mm-hmm.
What's on your mind, Graves?
Well, you know, I thought about a whole bunch of, like, more out-of-the-way things I could talk about, like the new Regina Spektor album and some short stories I've been reading. But I'm going to be boring and cliched and talk about Westworld, because it is amazing. Have either of you guys watched it yet?
I've seen the original,
because I'm
a
billionaire that has HBO.
There are other
methods. Also, we live in Canada.
Yeah, also we live in Canada.
We don't talk about
That's
that, Allie.
Get your act together, HBO. This is a warning. So, Mary, you've seen the movie?
I've seen the movie with Yul Brynner.
I've never seen the movie.
I know the concept of Westworld.
So, yeah, so what
But I hear they're kind of taking in a different direction.
They definitely are. So there have only been 4 episodes so far. I think it's going to be a 10-episode first season. They actually halted production partway through the first season, and it was because they wanted to, like, sit down and figure out what the next 6 years looked like in rough form so that they didn't, like, pull a Lost and get all confused in the middle because they didn't have a plan.
Oh, my goodness.
So that is awesome. But, yeah, I didn't realize that...
Wait, so Lost didn't have a plan?
Well, eventually they did. But, like, all that stuff in season 3 was not part of it.
You mean the last good season of Lost?
You mean season 2, right?
Whatever. Lost was dumb.
Let's save the Lost arguments for another day, or I'm going to get totally sidetracked. So Westworld is a science fiction story that was written originally by Michael Crichton, and I thought until recently that he had written it as a novel first and then it had been adapted into a film, which is how it usually goes with his stuff, but actually he wrote the film first, which came out in 1973. And then later he made it into a novel. So not the usual method. But it's essentially, it's the near future, and there are, there's like pretty sophisticated like robot/android technology. And it's this theme park, because Michael Crichton, I think this is where he perfected some of the ideas that later were a lot better in the Jurassic Park movie than in the original Westworld. But essentially, you as a guest can pay a bunch of money to go into this park that's styled like the Wild West and do whatever you want. Which I get the sense
he realizes
the
that
movie,
like Scottsdale, Arizona exists and you can just go there, right?
But can you murder people and get away with it scot-free? Because that, of course, becomes one of the like central tenets of Westworld. I hear that the, and Mary, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I hear the original movie was not, like, it didn't really go there. in terms of the really horrible things that you can get away with doing in the park?
Oh, there were some things that were alluded to, if I remember correctly. And not only was there a Westworld, there was also like another, if I, I'm
yeah,
really
that's
pulling
right.
at this. I feel like there was also like a Roman world
yeah,
and another
like a medieval
world. There was like three of them.
Yeah. And they did, they later did, I think, a pretty universally panned sequel called Future World.
Which I had no idea.
Seems like a weird concept for something that's already
Whoa.
Supposed to be set in the future. Anyway, so Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, who I didn't know until recently was actually Lisa Joy Nolan. She's his wife. have developed it for TV. And J.J. Abrams is involved in it as well. And they've definitely taken sort of a different tactic. Like, I think in the original, Yul Brynner's character, who's like the gunslinger kind of bad guy type, mm-hmm. is actually an android, right? But in this
Spoilers.
One, yeah, well, 1973, I feel like we passed the moratorium. but in Westworld, it's a bit different. So in the TV show, they definitely play a little with ambiguity around, like, the androids are so well designed that you can't tell right away who's an android and who isn't. Mm-hmm. They call them hosts. So the people who pay to go to the park are guests. The people who are the androids are hosts. So this park has been designed and has been up and running in this future timeline for like 30 years at least. And Anthony Hopkins plays one of the original architects of the park. And he's still pretty much in control creatively, but there's now sort of a board and directors and investors, and all of them have their various like motivations, some of which have not been revealed yet over the first four episodes. And James Marsden is in it. Evan Rachel Wood is pretty much the main character, I would say. Jeffrey Simpson, who was in the first James Bond movie, I think that's his name, is in it as well. So it's got a really, really good cast. And it's just, it's exploring the idea in a lot more depth than the movie did. And I think part of that is the TV format, but part of it is just really excellent writing. Like right away, the characters are very well drawn and the situations are very interesting. And it's really, it's also becoming this very interesting commentary on humans. So I think in the 70s and 80s, when they did these kinds of science fiction movies, it was very like, we're afraid that if we create artificial intelligence, it's going to turn on us and destroy us and become evil. And like, it was the bad guy. But in Westworld, very, very close to the beginning of this run of episodes, you realize that really the humans are being painted more as the antagonists here. And the hosts who go through these horrible things of being murdered and raped and tortured and used in these different scenarios and then have their memories wiped and then go back and do it all again the next day are the ones that we're sort of meant to be empathizing with or seeing things from their point of view. So it's kind of turning it on, you know, what do humans do when we think there are no consequences or no one is watching? And is that okay?
So it's just a commentary on Twitter.
On Twitter, on video games, on just the general way that we interact with people or beings who we think of as other or less than human, right? And so quite early, I don't think this is a spoiler because it's been in a lot of the news coverage around the show, we see that whether through some kind of glitch or through the evolution of the AI, or possibly through something Ford or another scientist in the park has done, unbeknownst to everyone else, some of the hosts start to remember their past experiences.
Oh, and that's similar to the Westworld 1973.
Okay, so that comes from that as well. Huh.
Yeah, because it's like one of those things where you think everything's normal, they're all human, and then they slowly reveal about the robots and things like that.
Yeah, so they're playing with that
a little
bit, too. And
that the robots remember.
So in the original movie, is there like an uprising?
Yes.
Yeah.
Everything goes sideways.
Goes totally haywire. Yeah. I think that's what they're building to this season. It's very interesting, too, because they're layering in, like, the history of the park and some kind of mysterious thing that happened 30 years ago that created some kind of, you know, awfulness. And
wouldn't it be funny if it was like a, there's eventually will be a throwback to CGI Yul Brynner?
People are wondering about that, except interestingly, they've taken Yul, there's also been, because they hop around a lot and follow, like, there's a couple of guests who they've been following for a few episodes, one of whom is very into all the horrible things he can get away with in the park, and the other one is being sort of more of a, oh, I don't know about this, and treating them all like they're humans. But they also are following a few other storylines happening in the park and happening over these like scenarios that repeat themselves, right? And so there's been some speculation about, are all of these different stories we're watching all happening in the same timeline or not? Because one of the characters we're following is played by Ed Harris, who's sort of this surprise addition to the cast late in the first episode. And he's playing a character very similar, at least in appearance and like demeanor, to Yul Brynner's gunslinger. But he's a human. And he's been coming to the park for 30 years. And he's sort of done all of the horrible and delightful things that you can do. He's gone through all the storylines and all the different areas of the park. And he's at the point now where he wants to, like, dig deeper into the game. And he's convinced that there are more layers and that there are other areas to unlock. And he's, at one point early in the first or second episode, he captures a specific host he's been after, scalps him, and inside his scalp is a map to a maze. So there's all these questions about, like, what is this maze area? Was it built for humans? Was it built for the hosts? Is it something that was built in from the beginning? Like, how crazy is this gunslinger guy? So there's that kind of video game layer to it, too. So it's been very, very enjoyable. Very mysterious and slow. And if you don't like waiting for mysteries to unfold, I would suggest waiting to the end of the season to start it. But there's definitely a lot going on, and it's just so beautifully done, too. The whole opening sequence is the 3D printing of the host and horse bodies, and it's just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely, there are lots of different characters and storylines with lots of different motivations and investments in this park and its technology, and yeah, I would highly recommend checking it out. Oh, nice. and Hemsworth, the other Hemsworth, Luke.
You mean the third Hemsworth?
Yeah, who's finally like stepped out of Australian soap operas and into the American public eye, is playing a really interesting character. He's the head of security in the park. And a lot of commentators have said that he seems to be the only one who understands what kind of story he's in. Because his whole focus is like making sure the hosts don't rise up and do crazy things.
So, the Helmsworth are just the new Baldwins is what's going on here, right?
I guess so. They're prettier, though. Even Luke.
And well, yeah, they're a lot nicer, I'm sure.
Well, sure. Yeah, I feel like they're less split along partisan lines right now than the Baldwin brothers are.
Oh, my dad grew up with the Baldwin brothers. Like,
really?
Their dad was like my dad's counselor in high school. So, yeah. We don't watch really anything by the Baldwin brothers on purpose.
Except for 30 Rock, right?
I have not seen 30 Rock. I want you really bad, but I just haven't braced myself yet.
We'll get you there. He is the most tolerable of the Baldwins. So, Mary, what has been on your mind grapes?
Well, let's see. For my mind grapes, I've been really enjoying the DC television universe that has been created. Previously, I was watching... So, basically, DC has come out with this series of television shows and I've been adding them slowly over the years. And And originally, I believe it started out with the TV series Arrow, based on the Green Arrow.
Right.
And it's expanded to include The Flash and Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow. I think those are the
four. So that's in the same universe as well.
So, yeah, so that's all in the DC universe. And so I haven't watched Arrow at all. Or not, like, I know enough about Arrow to be like, okay, I kind of get the gist. All four of those productions are now being filmed in Vancouver.
Yes, they are.
As you guys know.
As I know very well, having, like, flipped over some Flash power cords recently.
And, wow, nice.
Yeah.
But what I started watching was The Flash, and then I started watching Supergirl. So I'm still in the first seasons for both The Flash and Supergirl, but I'm just basically out of the four that are available. Haven't seen Arrow. I've watched all of Legends of Tomorrow. But Legends of Tomorrow is basically all this, like, the one-off characters or such from the other three series being in Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, so, like, so if you've watched the other series,
then you... Pardon?
They started in the other series and then went there?
Correct. So... they started in the other series and then went to Legends of Tomorrow. So then, now watching the older series of, like, The Flash and Supergirl and such, you're just going like, oh, that's where you came from. You know, so... So, for example, Brandon Routh plays a character called Dr. Ray Palmer. Mm-hmm. And he plays the Atom. And he originally is in The Arrow before... eventually going over to the Legends of Tomorrow, but not before making a guest appearance on The Flash. So within this universe, yeah, there are so many crossovers, it's ridiculous.
I'm just thinking, like, just I love Brandon Routh, but, like, Legends of Tomorrow and Arrow don't really appeal to me, but The Flash does.
So what I like, this is kind of meandering, but basically The Flash and Supergirl are both bright and happy for the most part. Like, not too much angst. You could potentially describe Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow as both being a little bit more angst-ridden or a little bit more fraught with feels.
Yeah, I tried to watch Arrow, but I found it to be, like, a little grimdark, but a little too self-serious about it, you know? Mm-hmm. Where it's like... Mm-hmm. Because, like, things like the Marvel Netflix series are dark, and they know that they're dark, but, like, they also kind of commit to it, whereas, like, Arrow was dark in a network TV kind of way, where it's like, we're dark and edgy, but it's still a fucking ABC show.
Well, it's also an
Arrow. No, it's CW. It's
a CW show. Oh, sorry. My bad.
Well, it's also, like, it's an outgrowth of the whole sort of Chris Nolanification of the DC universe, right? Like, you can watch it from Batman Begins, which actually has a lot of humor in it, through, you know, the darkness of The Dark Knight, mm-hmm. and then it just kind of leads you all the way up to, like, the Superman movies and
well,
Gotham.
Well, what's interesting with Arrow and The Flash, when the Arrow guest stars in The Flash, Barry and what's-his-face's, the Arrow's, ideological differences towards life, like, causes clashes. Like, it takes them a while to finally get their groove, because they're arguing all the time. And I think they even poke fun at the Arrow, if I remember correctly.
It's the fact that it's darker.
Like, why are you gotta be so moody all the time?
He's the angel
and also
of the
writers
DC universe.
Of the Flash. Pardon?
Oh, I was just saying he's the angel of the DC universe.
He kind of is the angel of the DC universe. And if the actor who plays the Green Arrow, Stephen Amell, man, he has it going on. Like, what he does outside of, like, acting, he runs his own conventions. He has his own Coffee of the Month Club, or is it... No, it's Wine of the Month Club.
Wow.
Which had, like, some sort of extra coffee thing that made its way into our office recently. But or within recent memory. But it's like things where you're just going like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
So it sounds like the Flash. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. But basically, like, Flash, I really like the Flash, and reason why I started watching The Flash is because I had watched, like, the first episode, went to Dragon Con this year, attended a panel in which it had the actors who played Cisco, and there is two other actors there that are from season two, right? Mm-hmm. I thought Summer Glau was supposed to be there because I trusted everything that the Dragon Con app told me was going to be there for the schedule. And because I was like, oh, it'd be nice to see Summer after all these years, you know, attend a big mega panel. And then she didn't come. And then I proceeded to be spoiled for all of season two.
Oh, no.
By attending this panel.
But it got you into it.
While having only seen the first episode of season one. So... But that's okay, because I was kind of curious, because I was like, wait, how do we get to this point? Like, what's going on? Like, how did we get from the first episode to all this stuff in season two you guys are alluding to?
So tell us about how they set it up. Like, how do they do the Flash's origin story and all of that?
Yeah, they start the Flash's origin story, and it's all covered in the first, episode. So, yeah, the Flash's origin story for him as a child, what happened with his mom and dad, you meet...
It's a DC show, so I can only assume that they are dead.
No, not entirely.
Not entirely.
And then there's also a foster family, and, like, Jesse L. Martin plays the Flash's, like, foster dad slash co-worker.
Flash coworker.
So much. I want him to be my dad. Well, not to replace my dad or anything, but I'm just like, oh my goodness, Barry lucked out. And then he also has like a foster sister, and so. So you meet all these characters within the first season, or not first season, first episode, and they do kind of do like the formulaic super powered human of the week.
So it feels like, I think the thing about those shows that both felt familiar and also was the reason I kind of didn't start watching them was that they felt like Smallville. Like they felt like the same kind of Smallville formula.
Oh, wait, but there's more.
Okay.
There's more. This is going to start getting a little spoily here in terms of it mentioning certain characters. And the event that happens in the plot that propels the rest of the events.
Allie is writing down add spoiler warning to the notes right now.
I am.
That's very good. So, and for everyone who's listening, basically what happens in the first episode, we get a little bit of Barry Allen, who eventually becomes the Flash. Barry Allen is a CSI working for the police department, and what happens is that on the night that this particle accelerator in the center of the city goes live, there's an accident in which the particle accelerator blows up and gives not only Barry his powers, but all sorts of other humans trapped in the wave of the particles of the particle accelerator.
Okay.
Yeah, so it starts doing like, so originally it starts out of, you know, like you meet Barry, you learn about Barry, all this stuff, and then you have your metahuman of the week. So you have all these humans that have gained particular powers, some decide to do good, some decide to do evil, that sort of thing. But the thing that kills me is but I get really excited about it, is like the last 5 minutes, a story starts revealing itself in bits and pieces about one of the characters that have been helping Barry Allen with his powers.
Okay, so there's also more of an ongoing...
like, Yes, but it's serialized, right? Sure. It feels almost very comic booky in that way, where you have the serial story. You do have your arc at the end of the 5 minutes, but you have your sort of like conflict of the week going on.
So it's almost like Buffy-ish too.
Yeah, because
Buffy would have like the monster of the week, but they would also like intersperse that with the higher up episodes.
Yeah,
they seem to keep it. Maybe it's just the first season. I'm not sure, but they seem to keep the big reveals for like this ongoing arc, like in the last 5 minutes of the, if not the last 2 minutes. So you kind of have to watch all the way to the end.
That's how they get you. That way. Yeah.
Mark Hamill also guest stars in the first season of The Flash.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Mark Hamill of Star Wars fame. And
yeah, as
writers.
As who?
Plus those writers, because they're a bunch of nerds and they love putting in references to various nerdy things.
But he's got to be the Joker. I mean, he is the Joker.
No, he's not the Joker. But it's okay because they make other references like that I went, how did Mark sign off on this? Except Mark has a sense of humor, so yeah. I can only assume it was
Well, he appeared in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, so you know he's got a sense of humor of some kind. He doesn't have a very high bar for guest cameos. So what about Supergirl? I've watched the first episode, and I enjoyed it, but I haven't really gone back to it since then.
Okay, so thanks for asking. Actually, what's been going on in my household is my roommate goes, hey, do you think we should watch another episode of Supergirl? And then in my reaction, she goes, of course, that was a very stupid question, because of course the answer is yes. So we've been watching Supergirl, and Supergirl is about Kara Zor-El, who is the cousin to Superman. Mm-hmm. And they lay this out in the first episode. Spoilers. I'm really spoiler sensitive.
I feel like we're not doing too much spoiling here.
I want you to still think that there's more to explore than just like me telling what I'm telling. But basically, for Kara, for Kara Zor-El, she's Superman's cousin, and she was when Superman was sent off as a baby. She was like a 13-year-old or like a preteen. Mm-hmm. And she was sent off at the same time the planet exploded, and something happened in the explosion that kind of like something hit her vessel and spun her into is it called the Forbidden Zone?
The Phantom Zone.
Pardon?
The Phantom Zone.
Yes, the Phantom Zone. Yeah. Thank you. And so in the process, they bring like this. Something happens in which her vessel, even though it goes off course into the Phantom Zone, eventually finds its way to Earth, but in the process it somehow brings along this like super prison of all of Krypton's like baddest of the bad.
Right, because that's what the Phantom Zone is, right? It's like a maximum security Kryptonian prison.
I think they referred to it as like a fort something. Mm-hmm. I'm completely blanking on. They say it like enough times that I should know it by now, but I don't. So that crashes to Earth. There's all sorts of aliens all over the place. Kara is raised by the Danvers family. Jebediah Danvers and his wife and their daughter Alex. And so you'll see Kara and Alex as grown-ups in Supergirl. So there'll be like various flashbacks to the Danvers family growing up. What I dearly love about the Danvers family is this matter of casting. And Jebediah Danvers is no other than...
Oh, that's right.
Dean Cain. Dean Cain.
I thought it was Dean Cain when I watched that episode. Yes. Like, yeah, that's Dean Cain.
Well, and also Alex Alex is Kyler Lee, which is actually one of the main reasons I checked out the show, because I loved Lexi so much on Grey's Anatomy.
Yep. So, and there's, so you have the Danvers family, you have the Danvers family, you have Kara adjusting to this new world. She eventually grows up and she becomes assistant to Kat. Oh my goodness. I can't believe I'm forgetting.
Calista Flockhart's character, right?
Kat Grant. Sorry. Yeah. Kat Grant, who is the queen of media.
It's a bit of a worse
kind of. Yeah. you kind of get that vibe a little bit. Of course, you have to be Supergirl to be the perfect assistant for her. But Kat Grant is played by our actress from Ally McBeal,
Calista Flockhart,
and she cracks me up. Like, I didn't think I would like Kat Grant as much as I do, but I do, because she'll just like casually like name drop. Like,
yeah, she does a like, lot of scenery references. Chewing in that first episode.
Yeah. Oh, she's a favorite. I didn't think I would like her character as much as I do, but oh my goodness. And there's also whatchamacallit. There is. There's also
Jimmy Olsen, right?
We also follow Alex's workplace as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which, this would be kind of spoilery.
That would be a spoiler. Even though it happens in the first
spoiler,
episode.
Spoiler, that Alex works for a government agency that is basically like the Men in Black, where they hunt aliens.
Which I really appreciated when I watched the first episode, because, like, it's about her mother who sent her, who was, like, a powerful Kryptonian leader, and her sister, who's, like, a badass secret agent. Like, there's a lot of women on that, and Kat. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, there's basically, it's a whole, the whole ensemble, it really develops over the first season. You learn all about each character, and it's just, like, they just do such a good job. Like, I'm watching this, and I'm going, why did CBS cancel this?
Yeah.
Like, why?
Thank goodness for the CW.
And for the
cheapness of making things in Vancouver.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's one of those things where CBS just didn't know how to handle that property or whatever. I'm so glad it got picked up by the CW, though, because I would have been so angry. I think I'm, like, at episode 19 or 20, so we're getting really close to the end, and things are building up. And if they just shut it down after a season, man, it would have been worse of a reaction than Firefly, I feel. So,
well, that's a pretty good endorsement.
That's how much I love Supergirl
that's a pretty good endorsement right there.
Yeah, awesome. So I highly, long story short, I highly recommend The Flash and Supergirl. They're well written. I love the characters. Supergirl, especially, is very good about developing and introducing various characters. Who was it? There, you even have like your evil billionaire technologist guy. And so, like, you have various adversaries and such. And I just watched the episode where they've continued the DC Universe tradition of having crossovers.
Oh, that's right. They have, like, a Flash crossover, right?
He's so adorable. and basically, awesome. My roommate has not watched The Flash. And so when she saw him in Supergirl, she goes, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to start watching The Flash, because if I just enjoyed him in this, like, one-off episode, I was like, oh, you're going to love him in the entire series.
Good marketing, DC. Good job.
I know. I was really impressed they managed to pull that off. I was just like, and basically, like, Supergirl and The Flash, Barry and Kara, they just, like, not only do they hit it off, but they're very similar and they're very positive, bouncy personalities.
That sounds like a nice, refreshing counterpoint to the DC movie universe. Thank you.
Yeah, like,
encouraging us to watch that.
I was just, Yeah, I highly encourage everyone to check it out. Apologies for any spoilers, but at this point, I don't think you're not nearly spoiled as I am. As
yeah, that's true.
The Flash season 2.
It's thanks, your revenge.
Thanks, actors. Thanks a lot. No, it's fine. It sparked my curiosity enough to actually check it out. So.
Well, okay, so let's come full circle here. Allie, you also got something to recommend this week?
I don't know. I haven't really found anything in the last little while that I've been really in love with. I've seen some stuff that I think is good. I've tried to watch the DC shows. I'm sorry, I found Supergirl really boring. Oh. I'm sorry.
Allie, really the solution is you just need to watch them with me present. And I promise between me and the show, there'll be enough entertainment.
Yeah, just Skype with Mary while you do it.
Okay, I'll
pretty
try
much.
That.
Like, Supergirl will provide the plot points, and I'll provide the excited flailing.
But I guess one of the shows that I have sort of started watching lately, it's one of these shows that, like, 45 different people have told me, like, oh my god, you're gonna love this show. You should totally watch it. So I've been watching Gallivant.
Oh my goodness. You mean, yes?
It's fine. It's clever. The songs are cute. It's,
at
I
least
mean, it's
season
ABC.
Two, they got better.
You said,
oh, okay, well, I'm still in season one. Well,
yeah.
It's kind of my MO. No, I'm kidding. No, I mean it's good. It's cute. I don't know. To me, any show that comes out of ABC, like, I think this is why I did that whole, like, oh, it's an ABC show. How edgy can it be? With the exception of How to Get Away with Murder, which I actually do quite like. That's another thing I could talk about. I've been watching the second season of How to Get Away with Murder. That show is so silly. I love it. But, like, Gallivant, it's fun. It's cute. It's got really clever songs. It's kind of, like, darkly funny. It's really cleverly written. I really like how witty they are.
Can you?
But yeah,
my favorite song is the peasant song.
That one's the best.
I have no idea what it is. You got to start from the beginning.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So Gallivant, it's this. It's a show that sort of takes a medieval comic storyline and puts a musical on top of it. And so, you know, the characters burst into song all the time, and it's a musical comedy, so it's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
And it sets out the plot within the first episode. So you have Gallivant the Knight and his squire. Maybe
who's played by the same actor who plays Lee Jordan. In the Harry Potter.
Oh, the Squire.
And also,
yeah.
Magnitude. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He is Magnitude, too, in Community. Yeah. Cool.
So, Allie, you're a musicals person, sort of, at least, right? Do you find the music, like, well-written?
Oh, no, the songs are extraordinarily clever. Huh. Like, they are very good. Yeah, songs are very good. They're really funny.
Yeah, and they will poke fun at themselves, because you're kind of like going through the season and you're going like, wow, you're really using that main theme a lot, huh?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so well, they eventually addressed that, which I thought was funny.
So and does it have, like, sort of an ongoing storyline as well?
Oh, sure, yeah. It's about, like, so Gallivant, in the first episode, I don't care about spoilers, I'm going to spoil everything. whatever.
It sounds like it probably has a pretty low-key fan base when it comes to the actual plot.
Well, I mean, it's no longer a thing, right? After the second season,
it went two seasons
canceled.
And got canceled. Gallivant is now on another TV show that I may be watching because I'm awful fond of that actor.
All right,
I saw it on Netflix. I don't know. So in the very first episode, you meet Gallivant. You get the sort of you know, explainy backstory song about how he's a magical knight and he's got this girlfriend, but his girlfriend was kidnapped by the local evil king. And so then in the
first episode, by?
I don't know people.
Oh, he's also he is the former if you ever watch Psych, he's the lead detective that is antagonized by the psychic guy. He's also plays Kane on Supernatural with that glorious beard of his. I'll find his name.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, continue.
But he's the local evil king kidnaps her, and then, you know, Galavant shows up at their wedding and is like, I'm here to save you. And she's like, actually, I think I'm just going to marry the king. It's an easier life, you know. So then that kind of, like, you know, shoots down Galavant. And so then the next time we see him, you know, he's, you know, it's like 6 or 8 months later or whatever. And he's like living in his hovel and just like being depressed. And, you know, and then he's approached by a princess to start a new kind of quest. Right. Mm. And she manages to convince him to go on this quest. And it's so about them sort of getting there. And so I've just watched the episode where they've gotten to the castles, like the fourth or fifth episode of season one. So that's the kind of general plot so far. I imagine that it's going to get more complicated.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's very cute. It's a very good, like, you know, turn your brain off sort of thing.
I also appreciate the cameos that they have.
Oh, yeah, the cameos are
really
funny.
Nice. Cameos.
Yeah. Do they have, like,
you gotta watch
musical theater type people as cameos, or?
Well, not even, like, John Stamos shows up as another knight, but the knight's name is John Hamm, Sir John Hamm, but played by Stamos, which is like, okay. Yeah, and then there's a pirate king at one point who's played by the actor who plays Lord Grantham.
Oh, Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So.
And he sings.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, it's very cute. It's very silly. But yeah, but that's kind of the only thing I've been watching lately that I've actually been enjoying. But yeah, I don't know, it's kind of a dull point for media for me. I haven't been seeing a lot of stuff I like. I'm excited for some video games that are coming out. I'm excited for Pokemon. I'm excited for a remastered version of Skyrim. So probably in the next few months, I'll have more exciting things to talk about.
Well, in the meantime, Galavant sounds like fun.
Yeah.
It sounds like all having fun. I think mine might be the least fun one this week because it's so dark, but it's fun to try to figure it out.
This is a class Z.
C?
Z? Yeah, totally Z. Z. Mary, you were just saying how much you miss Canada. Z.
I was saying how much I miss Canada, but have you heard?
I don't miss Canada. It's classy. Well,
I was going to say, can't you tell my accent has kind of changed from my normal Canadian to just a little bit more Southern?
It is just a little bit more Southern. Yep. What were you saying earlier? And I was like, she's totally saying that more Southern than she would have. It was something to do with it. I'll remember eventually. But
yeah.
But yeah, so we have you here for a class Z because you've been doing, like, a super interesting job.
Yeah, it's been, I was looking it up, and, like, the last time I talked to y'all was, like, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
tell
I've
us
seen
everything
you in person
that's happened.
Since then. Yeah, yeah. I've seen you in person since then. I saw
that's
y'all
true.
In February, but
that's true. You got your own live episode that didn't get recorded in the back of your car.
It was glorious.
Wasn't that just you and me bickering for an hour, though?
And John.
Oh, and John. Don't
oh, yeah, yeah.
John. So. Yeah. Yeah, no, that was great. But it was sort of like, actually, not only like the episode in the back of my car, but like conversations throughout that trip would just happen organically.
Mm.
And I would just be like, this could be content for SS Librarianship. Too bad we're not recording this.
Yeah, that's how this show started in the first place, was with that exact thought.
Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, no, I'm happily employed with Equinox Software, and they're an open source vendor, specifically focusing in library software. We provide support for both the Evergreen ILS and Koha ILS, which are two open source.
Koha was in there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So we provide services around these free open source softwares. And so we do everything from like hosting and support to migrating libraries from their old ILS to Evergreen or Koha. We also provide development and training. And so what I do as part of my work is I train.
So this has involved like some travel for you, right?
It does. Yeah, I tend to be the person primarily sitting on the road. So what I do is I go to libraries as part of their migration process for the most part. I go on site as libraries are transferring from their old ILS to usually Evergreen is what I tend to be sent out on the road for. And from there, I do 2 to 3 days of training usually. Sometimes it's a little longer, sometimes it's shorter. And what I really like about it is that I'm able to help these libraries learn about their new software and answer any questions they have and hopefully help the migration process easier for everyone involved. So, because usually when I appear, that is the first interactions that the wider staff has had interactions with Evergreen. So
what attracted you about going to this company and to working with Evergreen and Koha?
Well, one, they had a job opening. two, they were in Georgia, where I was living with my parents at the time. Three, you know, no. What I like about Equinox is that they're an open source vendor. So while there may still be some misunderstandings in the larger library community sort of like how we act as a vendor and that we provide services around the free software rather than making people pay for the software itself. Like right. The software like Koha and Evergreen, that is community supported. You can, if you don't like that something that you see within the software, you too can write your own code and submit it to the community to be included in the software in the future.
Hmm.
So, what I like about Equinox is that we're able to provide all of these services towards libraries and to make their lives easier. And cool. That we're able to, I guess just like be there. 'Cause so often, I'm building relationships and I'm meeting new folks. I have so many new library people that I know or new to me library people that I know now. And I've just seen these wonderful communities take shape over the 2 years or so that I've been working.
That sounds like just the best job for you because you were so good at connecting people and like putting a positive spin on new situations. Like, it must be very rewarding.
Well, it is rewarding, and it's very interesting to see as I go to these different libraries, not only the services that the libraries provide, but how they approach various situations. So it's always, at least from like coming in as a complete stranger, like you'll see how management manages different change management situations.
Hmm.
So because a new software can be really like really intimidating, and
oh, yeah.
I totally have sympathy for that experience. And I know I've gotten to the point, and it's gotten to the point of fluency with Evergreen and Koha because of practice.
Hmm.
So because I practiced so much, or I've answered enough questions or investigated enough things that I didn't know, and now I know, and I respond back to clients like, oh, yes, no, you had this question, and this is the real answer that we both have learned from, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those things that I feel really, really strongly that we're doing good work in providing libraries a way to have a ILS software to like manage patrons, catalog, do acquisitions work, provide reports, that sort of thing, for like the state quite a few libraries in various states have this state report that they have to fill out every year. So, like, knowing how to get the statistics that you need is really important. So
yeah, that's a huge, like, it's more and more of a concern with every single new piece of software that comes into the library or every new database or whatever. It's how do we make our, how do we create our story as a library out of this product? That's awesome.
Definitely. And so, it's just been a joy. I love the larger community. I love interacting with folks. You know me, the extrovert that I am, I just feed off the energy of others. So being trapped in a room with me for 8 hours
like
a day.
Vampire.
Extroverts
equals vampires. Got it.
I stay trapped in a room, but our like my on-site training day is like from 9 to 4. But I'm a big believer in the lunch hour, so we get a full hour for lunch.
Nice.
So how far and wide
do they send you?
Pardon?
How far and wide, like from the base in Georgia, do you end up going?
Atlanta's nice. Atlanta, Georgia's nice in that it has that big major airport hub.
Yeah.
I've been traveling primarily in Pennsylvania, North Carolina. I've also done some trainings in Virginia, South Carolina, Minnesota.
Wow.
Oh.
I've been to, like, Fargo, North Dakota by way of Minnesota for a training. So, where we went to in Minnesota once was so far north that the sign said, Canada, 60 miles. And I was like, we can still make it to the border if you gun it. I was like, let's go back to Winnipeg. I know where some good pierogi places are. I didn't work with my supervisor who was driving at the time, so. Oh, well. I'm trying to think if there's... I tend to be more East Coast-based for my trainings.
Mm-hmm.
But I have volunteered myself. I think someone contacted our company from Lebanon or something like that. And I said, I volunteer! I know someone I can stay with there.
Like Lebanon, so. Lebanon, or Lebanon, Kansas?
No, Lebanon, Lebanon. Sorry. Lebanon, like Beirut. Like.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But that didn't fly. They were like, nope, we're going to have to increase your insurance too much. It's not worth it.
Aww.
So remote, it's amazing. Because I also do a lot of remote training too. So, and it's always interesting because once you get a handle on the content, of course, it's just interacting with the personalities and seeking to meet different information needs that they have.
Yeah, it still sounds like very, very librarian-y work, meeting information needs.
Oh, most definitely. That's why I was like, no. We're keeping my title as training services librarian.
Awesome.
So, and actually, I think over half of this... of my coworkers also have their library degree.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like...
That's pretty great.
I know
that's
over
not
half.
Always the case with vendors, so that's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we work with a lot of libraries. I tend to be primarily public libraries, but we do have other types of libraries that we provide services for. So...
I'm curious from like a sort of burgeoning manager point of view, like I've done a little bit of acting, I'd like to do more, I want to move my way up and actually become a manager, which I know a lot of librarians are not super keen on. So I'm curious, like, as you've been watching these different institutions deal with managing their staff through times of like big change and upheaval with these new systems, like, have you learned about anything that really works or really doesn't work? Like, have you seen it done really well?
Well, it depends on the different style and how well as management you know your staff. So for example, if you know your staff is maybe really worried about these big changes, even though you're confident in their ability to adapt, you may do things like make sure that they're kept so busy until the day of training so that they don't have any time to worry about the migration itself because you're handling that.
Right.
There's other styles of management in which everyone is brought on board and everyone is aware of the decisions that are made as part of the migrations.
So that gives them like some more ownership over it.
Some more ownership, yeah. So there's just different ways to handle it depending on to handle it successfully depending on your culture. Your workplace culture and your management style and your assessment of your staff members.
How do you deal with, if you're there just for the day or whatever in your training, mm-hmm. and there are people who are like, no, I don't want to learn this. Like, does that ever actually happen?
I can neither confirm nor deny, but I will say that I bring donuts with me on the first day of training if I can. I'm not saying I bring it every time, but I'm saying I try to, just in case you're listening to this in the far future and I don't bring donuts anymore. I'm sorry.
When donuts are outlawed.
You can't be mad at me if your blood sugar is low, you know, and such, but there's donuts there. Mm-hmm. I wish there was like a healthier option that I could provide more consistently, but usually donuts are pretty like consistent favorite / I can always find a place to get donuts for yeah. folks.
What's unhealthy about donuts?
I don't know. I just hear things.
They make
sometimes.
You more receptive to change.
Yeah.
They're change donuts.
Change yes. donuts. Oh man, Jonathan's probably thinking about digital donuts as he's listening to this. A little inside joke for the DSP staff.
Yeah.
Well, I can see you handling those kinds of situations very well, though. Like, if people are sort of like, why do we have to do this? Like, I could see you unpacking that well.
Yeah, well, sometimes there's, like, different politics at the local and state level and different things like that. But for the most part, I'm just like, well, I am here to answer any questions to make sure that you feel better about this product, that you know that what the software can do and how... I actually do a lot more, I tend to do a lot more consulting in terms of when I'm on site, someone will say, this is our current workflow with our current software. And I go, oh, that's great. In Evergreen or in Koha, this is your workflow that you would follow that would probably be easier for you.
Okay. So do you like help them figure out sort of how to reassign staff tasks around the software and that sort of thing, like help them figure
out.
Kind
of, yes, because sometimes they've been doing certain tasks like a certain way for so long that's like really arduous and time consuming and everything. And even though sometimes there's anxieties with these trainings where it goes, oh, well, I won't be doing this task anymore in the new software. Like, what am I going to do? And my answer is always, oh, don't worry. There's still plenty of stuff for you to do. Like, it just may be something like a little bit different, or it will be easier in this aspect, but you may find it more complicated in another aspect.
So part of your job is reassuring people that the robot revolution is not, in fact, nigh yet.
Oh, robots are so dumb. Or not even robots. I mean, I heard somewhere, I think somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, there is like a warehouse with automated, like... an automated check-in system with conveyor belts and everything. Mm-hmm. But even then, it's like one of those things where it's like, don't worry, this software is not going to replace you. It's supposed to make your life easier so you can do different things for your community and your workplace.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What if I want to be a robot?
Well, you can do you, Allie. Whatever you decide to do. But yeah, so I really enjoy it, and usually I'm on the road about once a month. Sometimes it gets really busy, and I'm on the road much more often than once a month. But I get just to get to be involved with these communities and travel all around various places. So it's really funny because I tend to, when I travel around places in North Carolina, then when I come back home and I go to trivia, like our trivia master guy, he grew up in North Carolina. So, and apparently went all around North Carolina based on all the places he knows that I also went to.
Oh, wow.
So we'll talk about various things. He's been like, I haven't been over to that town in a very long time. What's going on? I'm like, oh, there's a really good hipster eatery, like, right there. And then if you turn around the corner, you got this and you got that. And, oh, it's amazing, you know, so.
I thought you were going to say that traveling around like this helps you do better on your trivia team.
You know what? I still say that another SLACE graduate, there, Caroline Crowell, who is another like SLACE graduate. Mm-hmm. She's also in Atlanta with me, and she's also on the trivia team with me. And she actually like tends to know more things that somehow answer our trivia questions much more often.
So, well, at least it's still a librarian representing.
Yeah, well, she was a dual degree, I should say. Mm. She works as an archivist, but she has the dual degree. but she'll know things like how many counties there are in the state of Georgia, because as working at the state archive, she has to know that.
Right.
So, so it's like things where we're going like, coincidence?
Everyone recruit your local archivist to your pub trivia team. That's the lesson there.
Pretty much. Well, I think who is it? Myron Groover and John Fink have like a crushing trivia team over in Hamilton, Toronto area.
Just from following them on Twitter, that does not surprise me at all.
Yeah. They tweet about it occasionally, so I forget what their team name is.
Obscure, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, trivia does appeal to the generalist and a lot of librarians, so should come as no surprise to our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
That some of us find our way over to the local trivia hangouts.
So I'm curious, how much, like, instructional design kind of work is involved in your job? Like, do you actually create the, not just the content, but, like, the delivery methods and, like, handouts and slides and all of those things as well for your training?
Yeah, so with the training that I provide, depending on the type of delivery, whether it's online or in person, will determine the materials that will be used. There is sort of like a body of handouts and outlines and knowledge that is passed through my education department that I work for. Mm-hmm. So we do kind of pull our resources on this. If we don't know, then there's usually someone else who knows within the company. If it's online training, for the most part, I'm just using my online. I've determined through conversation with the client like what material needs to be covered, mm-hmm. And then if the material is delivered online, then I'm just using an outline and I'm covering the material and I'm showing my screen in which I'm giving a tour of the software.
Right. So you tend to like make it sort of live and hands-on when you can.
Correct. And then when I'm training on site. That is a situation in which I am also sharing my screen, following a script, but there's also hands-on exercises for most of the subjects that I train on.
Hmm.
So, and there's also handouts. If the library is joining a consortium, especially for like Evergreen consortiums, mm-hmm. Those consortiums also tend to have resources and also standards within the consortium that they tend to recommend libraries to follow.
Oh, right. So
and
that
they'll
would
also
be
have
the...
things like committees and things like that. And they'll offer like continuing education opportunities where sometimes myself or other trainers are brought in. So
that would be like at the BC Libraries co-op level here.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that manage.
Who am I thinking of? Christine Burns and Jennifer Pringle are my peers in terms of training, because they provide training on behalf of the BC Libraries co-op.
Okay, cool.
So
do you find that over time, like, a lot of the requests that you get from clients for upcoming sessions, you're like, oh, I already have that one. I built it in response to a previous query. Like,
pretty much, because for the most part, there's already, like, modules already set up. So you're going, okay, well, you want to train on circulation? Okay, we got circulation. It's gonna. We already know it's gonna last for this long, and it's gonna cover these subjects.
That's awesome.
Same thing for cataloging. That sort of thing. But if there's other things like they've gone through training. If they got through training and they go, okay, so these are our questions, and we can't, or we might not remember this workflow or whatever that we discussed. Could you go over this? Additional training hours are used for that, and I just go, oh, okay, go through it, and we provide a customized training session for that.
Okay.
So
I love hearing about like instructional librarians not reinventing the wheel. Like, it's good. It's awesome that you have like a pool of people and things you can pull from. That's great.
Yeah, at this point, I'm definitely busy enough that you kind of have to keep it simple. Mm-hmm. And then with every software upgrade, sometimes there's new features that we have to develop additional materials for. So there's also, definitely different ways of delivery, like training videos. So, because we're open source, a lot of the materials that we have, such as training materials or other documentation that we do within our training education department, that's available either on our website or also on the Evergreen community website.
That's really awesome. Well, mm-hmm. It sounds like a very good job for your skill set.
I really do love it there, and I keep out of trouble for the most part. So, that, and then I've gotten involved with Code for Lib 2017, the national conference planning.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah,
well, that sounds.
You should
like
come on down. It's going to be in LA this year.
Ooh, that's tempting. We'll see. Thank you for sharing all that with us, Mary. I think that.
Oh, thank you for having me on. It's been too long.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful to talk to you, and also just great to give our listeners a peek at like some sort of somewhat non-traditional library work that's still really vital and mm-hmm. really uses your skills. That's awesome. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mary.
You're more than welcome.
Always such a delight to talk to Mary.
That was so nice. We had a little update off the air on how things are going for her as well, and it sounds like she's having a great time down there.
That's awesome. So Sam, what's going on in social media land?
So our Twitter followers are steadily ticking up. It's really nice to see new people enjoying and discovering the show. Some ideas flying back and forth, especially about getting Daft Kifty back on board. Also, Rhea Belford, who recently started to follow us, actually went back and reshared one of our episodes related to ebook technology. I think it's the one where I talked about the ebook summit. And it looks, sounds like she's at some kind of forum that's about that. So it's always nice to see people kind of sharing our work here as ways to explore different library topics, which is part of why we do it. That's awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Rhea.
Absolutely.
If people want more, where should they go, Allie?
Well, oh my gosh, there is so much stuff at sslibrarianship.com. You can check out our whole archive, listen to back episodes. Oh, it's pretty great.
Yeah, and you can order buttons or just throw us a few shekels. We just sent out a button order the other day, so that was really exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, we get them all the time, and it's not exciting at all when what happens.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess all that's left is to thank Mary for coming aboard, and thank Jonathan Colton for the use of our theme song, Glasses, off the album Artificial Heart.
It's a great album.
I just found out Night Vale's going on the cruise this year.
Ugh.
So you cruisers are going to just have so much fun.
Well, we'll have to figure out something else for the future, then, maybe. Can I use our platform for one final rant, Sam?
Do it.
I may?
Do it.
If something is pumpkin spice, it does not mean there is pumpkin in it. Pumpkin spice is a blend of spices used to flavor pumpkin pies. So there's a reason why your latte doesn't taste like pumpkin.
Blew my freaking mind.
Did you not know that? Oh, it's been driving me crazy.
that's our public service announcement for the week.
Yeah, everyone's like, my pumpkin spice latte doesn't actually taste that pumpkin-y. I'm like, it's because it's not pumpkin. Pumpkin spice is a spice blend.
It's like how allspice is actually its own thing.
Yeah, so pumpkin spice is a blend of cinnamon, ginger, nutmeg, and clove. That's all it is.
Clove.
Indeed. Sorry, that was my public service announcement.
No, I like it. You just educated a lot of people about a very important issue.
Exactly. And now we'll have to, you know, let you all go. So we will catch you on the proverbial flip side. Sorry, that's been funny.